name is Barry Allen. I am the fastest man alive.
RandomChatter.com presents a Flash podcast.
You see that red blur?
Dedicated to the discussion of the Flash television series.
A lot to discuss.
Scarlet Velocity.
Run, Barry, run!
Welcome to Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. Thanks for slowing down for a moment. I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm Hartley Rathaway. You know, it's whispered that soon, if we all call the tune, then the Piper will lead us to reason.
Hold on, I couldn't hear. I got like a ringing in my ears. So that sounded poignant, though. That was good. That was very good. So you've all discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show, The Flash, with discussion and commentary on the various episodes of The Flash. So my friend Hartley, can I call you Hart?
Hart or Two Hart. Yeah.
Two Hart. I'll just call you Jay this time.
Okay.
Keep it straight. And Jay, you're going to tell us about this very sonic episode.
This was a very sonic episode. Made me hungry for a sonic burger. this is episode 11 from season 1 of The Flash, called The Sound and the Fury, originally airing on January 27th, 2015. Written by the duo of Allison Schapker and Brooke Elkmeyer, and directed by John Showalter. And so we've got a little discussion here on the show. Everyone has a hero, right? So mine was Billy Thompson. It was cool because he got up the nerve to ask Tommy Lawson out on that date in second grade.
Oh, but that's always hard.
Yeah, that's what he said. That's a story for another time. Anyway, Harrison Wells was someone's hero once. Hartley Rathaway really, you know, looked up to him and was happy to be his number one. Well, I mean, that is until Wells treated him like number two. Hey, you know, I'll be here all night. After Harrison then kicked him out of Star Labs for threatening to tell the public about the dangers of the particle accelerator, he was feeling grumpy. But now he's back, and he's out for revenge. He's planning on taking out Harrison's new golden boy, the Flash. Shouldn't that be more like Scarlet Boy? I think we should change that to Scarlet Boy.
Scarlet Boy, you're right. That does make more sense, yep. Doesn't it?
But how's he going to do that, you ask? Well, he's going to use his deadly sound technology to find out just the right frequency. Wells and the team have only seconds to say, "Piper, no piping," before it's too late.
You know, I just, when you tell me all about it, I just want to say, what's the frequency, Kenneth?
That's your Benzedrine. Oh, wow.
All right. So, well, I just have a little bit of news for us this week before we get into talking about the show. They're both kind of related, but it turns out there will be another Arrow and Flash crossover.
Yay!
Now this isn't a really big surprise. It was very successful when they did it earlier in the season. It was very popular. People liked it. I thought it was fantastic. I'd like to see it more connected, actually, between the two series.
Right. But I think out of anything, that was kind of your biggest complaint, was that it wasn't more of a real crossover like what we would think about from a comic book, being an actual part one and a part two.
Right. So it looks like we will be seeing Oliver and Barry team up. Wait a minute. Isn't Oliver dead?
He's mostly dead, as we discussed. On Green Justice.
All right. Yeah. Well, give him a pill covered in chocolate, and he should be back before you know it. And it sounds like he'll be back next season. However, there may be more this season.
Very exciting.
An Arrow and Flash crossover. Not technically featuring anything quite as pointy as an Arrow, though. It looks like maybe Brandon Routh is going to be guest starring.
So it's a little crossover.
It's a little crossover, yeah. Oh, see, I totally missed that, and I did
because
it
Brandon Routh, of course, plays the Atom.
So he's going to be in Central City, it looks like.
Yeah, it sounds like, based on some things that the producers have said, that Ray Palmer is having a little problem with his Atom suit, his ATOM suit, and so he visits Star Labs in Central City to get the help of Cisco and Caitlin and Dr. Wells to fix whatever his problem is. Again, I'm sure it's a little problem. So,
well, I like it. This is, it sounds like this is going to be episode 18, so right around the end of the season. And I love the title of the episode, and I'm going to share it because I don't think it spoils anything. Would you agree with that? We'll vote
now. Yeah, I think it's a great – in the same way that the crossover for I think it was the Arrow crossover was called The Brave and the Bold. I think this is a great title for a crossover episode.
Right. All-Star Team-Up, which is
– awesome.
Yeah, that's very similar to the All-Star Comics, which, of course, you know, had many good – not crossovers, but, you know, team-ups.
Right.
Justice Society and – things like
yeah,
that,
very, so. Very golden age. All-Star Comics was, and
shouldn't that be called Scarlet Age?
We could. I think All-Star Comics had Green Arrow stories. I think it was like Green Arrow, Aquaman, and then some other miscellaneous stuff in it at the time.
Oh, but Aquaman.
We'll know more about that by the time issue 18 comes along, or episode 18 comes along.
Right. So I am excited about that. I was happy to hear that. That'll be kind of cool. Felicity will be there too, by the way. That's
oh,
why
yeah.
Ray is
that's
joining
That's really what
them.
You were paying attention to, and then you just found out about, oh, Ray Palmer's
going
to be there too.
Oh, Ray's going there too? All right.
Whatever.
Well, my wife will like that. But all right. Well, let's get into discussing this episode, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I thought it was great. Had a villain. Can we say supervillain? I mean, he's not really super, I guess. But from the comics, I don't know. They call him villain. Whatever.
He's kind of got the ego of a supervillain. There was, you know, because supervillains like, and again, when I'm talking about a supervillain, I'm talking about somebody like Dr. Evil, you know, for example.
Dr. Evil's a supervillain?
Oh, totally. Don't ever call him that. I think he's really upset by that. But no, it's, you know, ego is one component of a supervillain. You've got to have somebody that is so full and sure of themselves, you know, that, you know, because Hartley is, he's pretty sure he is, you know, he's so smart, he's better than Cisco, all this kind of stuff. His ego is definitely big enough for him to be in the supervillain category.
Yeah, for sure.
The powers, you know, maybe... not so much, but
hey, he's just getting started, right?
Yeah.
It's like a lot of these villains that you see on this, including Captain Cold and Heatwave. They're just getting started with the idea of ways to take down the Flash. Mm-hmm. They can take these ideas and mold them into something even more dangerous, which is what makes them rogues. You know, that's what makes them so deadly,
right? Well, and Hartley, that's not even really his primary objective. It just sort of, he realizes that the best way to get to the person that he wants to hurt is to go through the Flash. So.
Right. I would suspect that it will evolve into personal issues with the Flash.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happens when you have an ego like that. You start to get defeated by somebody like that, and then it's, you know, it's all about you. I mean, that's...
Exactly. How could he do that to me? I'm smarter than that. So.
That's like the Lex Luthor complex or something. But all right, so
Lex,
you know,
Luthor, Doctor Doom, that sort of thing. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he starts off. Barry starts off the episode talking about heroes. You know, he says everyone has a hero. He talks about all this hero worship. I guess that's true. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be a huge hero. A hero could be someone you look up to, even just like a parent, which I think almost is kind of what Hartley was doing. But,
you know, I think that's probably a good point, that Wells was acting as a surrogate parent, especially I'm not sure of quite the time frame for when Hartley's parents cast him out. But I think based on what Caitlin said, he had come out of the closet before he had been working it, or at least before the flashbacks that we had seen then.
Yeah, it kind of felt like that. I don't think they ever mentioned specifically, but it would fit with you know, with his anger issues that he was having and at
Star Labs. I mean,
at Star
Cisco
Labs, yeah, with Cisco and just his attitude with Wells, and I mean, that would totally fit that. You know, I mean, that's kind of a defense mechanism when you know, people are judging you. A lot of times people act like that. They're mean, you know.
Right.
So that's kind of how he turned out to be. And unfortunately, the meaner you are, the less people like you, and the meaner you get. So I mean, it's a it's kind of
a
bad loop. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So so who, you know, who are people's hero? In this case, I think Hartley really did look up to Wells as the father he didn't quite have. Not only did they seem to accept him for who he was, because they didn't care, they admired his intelligence and knew how smart he really was. But is this the case where Hartley was putting Wells up on a pedestal, or is it more than that?
I didn't really get the thought that he was putting Wells up on a pedestal. I thought it was more, I think Hartley was putting himself up on the pedestal.
You don't think he was trying to impress Wells? You don't think that that's why he constantly, now I don't want to say not toward the end, you know, when he threatened Wells.
No, but in the flashbacks and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think he was trying to impress Wells. So let me just clarify then. When somebody says that you're trying to put somebody else up on a pedestal, to me that makes it seem like Hartley is trying to make Wells look better than he is, or say that Wells can do no wrong. But what I'm thinking is that, I mean, Hartley was extremely impressed with the way Wells behaves, or, you know, just his intellect and things like that, you know, challenging him to these chess games. But Hartley was, you know, Hartley couldn't beat Wells at chess. Hartley was trying to impress upon Wells how smart he was. You know, it's like that guy that says all the time how smart he is, and he doesn't really prove how smart he is necessarily, because, you know, okay, show me how smart you are. It's like, well, there's this. It's like, okay, well, but did you check this? Oh, no, I didn't. You know, it's like, well, you should look at that next time. So Wells, I think, is kind of, you know, cutting him off. And Hartley was just trying to, you know, impress him with his knowledge. And I don't know that Wells was noticing as much as Hartley wanted him to.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I do agree with that, and that you get kind of that that envy. Well, once Sisko came, you know, he had that envy. He really wanted that attention that Sisko was getting all of a sudden. Now, for us as an audience, knowing that there's definitely something else going on with Wells, is that why?
What?
Is that? Hey, now I didn't say what. Specifically, yeah. We'll get into that. But is that because Wells just didn't care because he already kind of knew what he wanted, or was he generally just like not impressed with Hartley?
You're still talking about in like the flashbacks, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In the past, you know, before they kind of severed their relationship.
In this, it's so hard to like be certain about anything I'm saying about Harrison Wells. You know,
exactly.
It's like I think he's doing this. It's like, and then next week he does something that totally contradicts that. I think in the same way that it feels like he's using Barry to achieve a goal for himself, but he appears to be doing it in an altruistic way. Right? It's like, I'm doing this for you, Barry. But we know because of what's going on that he's actually doing it for himself, we think. So I think that's the same kind of thing that was going on with Hartley. We know that Wells wanted to get this particle accelerator built because we're making an assumption then that it's because he wants to create the Flash so that he can make the Flash the best speedster that he can be. Because in some way, that's going to benefit Harrison Wells. So I think it's just, you know, he's just using Hartley in the same way that he's using Caitlin, and he's using Cisco, and he's using Barry to achieve his own ends.
Okay.
But I don't think that's also the full story. I think there's more to that, and I want to. I mean, there's definitely other things I want to discuss about Wells here, but I don't want to stray too far from this topic.
Well, no, we'll get that. No, I like this. This was kind of a little bit about Cisco too. You know, whereas he there was a lot of comparison between Hartley and Cisco in this,
right.
and I like that comparison because it's very similar to the hero villain comparison that we've talked about in the past on this show and some other shows. What makes a hero? You know, mm-hmm. why is Barry the hero? What kind of sacrifices does he make to be the hero? And I think that comparison with it's kind of like a smaller comparison, almost like a sidekick kind of comparison where between you know Piper and Cisco and. Cisco is very smart too. He's got the same kind of knowledge as Hartley does. And yet he's making these different decisions. It's not all about him. It's not that self-centered thing. So I think what you said about Wells there is you know, he's doing it for himself. I think that's very telling. I agree with that.
And also, I mean, the other, I like how you kind of broke down the comparison between Hartley and Cisco. I mean, and you're checking off the same things about them. They're both driven. They're both smart. But the one thing that Hartley puts into the equation that Cisco does not seem to have is that ego.
Yeah.
Cisco is in it because he is really in it for the team perspective. And if he does have any faults, which we know he does from previous episodes, it's his hubris. He thinks that he doesn't see the ultimate dangers out there, right? Everything is safe. He'd be one of those guys where it's like, in the Boomerang episode, which I think was the first crossover with Arrow, you know, he's just basically experimenting with the boomerang when it boom takes off and it, you know, it almost, I think it was Caitlin, it almost hit, right? It just sticks in the wall. He's so enamored by the work. It's almost like he can lose perspective that, you know what, we're dealing with some very dangerous people here that have superpowers and the stakes are a lot higher than he seems to think they are. Given the fact that his cold gun was stolen, you know, things like that. So he kind of
talks about his attitude and his point of view about that stuff, though, with I think it was Roy in that episode. Mm-hmm. Or maybe that was the Arrow episode. But, you know, kind of
it was the Arrow episode when they were in the van with Roy and Diggle.
Right. And he, you know, he was talking about why he's a hopeful person, basically.
Yeah. Well, and that's. And that's the difference between the two shows, between Arrow and Flash. This is a much more positive, hopeful show, whereas, you know, Arrow, you know, tends to be a little darker and stuff like that. And even the villain, like even Hartley as his, you know, he's a pretty grim character. I mean, he's definitely got a lot of demons. They mentioned that he, quote, came out, but I found it interesting they didn't use the term gay to describe him at any point. I feel like they're downplaying that a little bit, though that does not necessarily define the character, but it's an important trait for that character. I mean, that has led him to where he is. First he was shunned by his parents for his sexual orientation, and then he may have misinterpreted this, but he was shunned by Harrison Wells for his intellect, seemingly. And so, you know, that's kind of, those are, I think, the two things that have really set him off.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would agree with you. He was shunned. I mean, from his point of view, he was shunned for his intellect.
Right.
Because he was trying to do the right thing, maybe in a, you know, kind of a douchey kind of way, but and Harrison Wells kicked him out and got rid of him.
I guess you can say in a douchey way, but I mean, imagine I mean, here's a guy, he's about to turn on this very dangerous device, and you've got someone coming to him saying, hey, this is dangerous, you know, we need to be sure of this. And he just, I mean, really, he dismisses him. We know because Harrison Wells is aware of all this and wanted to turn it on anyway. But, I mean, you know, liken this to, you know, any other kind of whistleblowing that we may have heard about in the news or something like that. I mean, you know, it's these people are castigated by the organizations that hired them, you know, to be, you know, watching for this kind of stuff. And as soon as they basically turn on that organization, it's like they are
demonized.
Demonized. That's the word. I was
yeah.
For.
No, yeah, oh, I see what you're saying. I mean, and I guess it was just more his attitude towards that, or it was like you know, when he finally confronted Harrison Wells about it being so dangerous, he was just like, I'm going to tell everybody about this. I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to the media. I'm going to tell everybody. But I mean, you're right. I mean, that kind of did fit his personality, and it was like an attack, you know, on Harrison Wells. So Harrison
right,
Wells went
was,
on the defensive, right?
Yeah, and that's how it was written. I mean, it was written to be a kind of a threat in that way, and so Harrison Wells can strike back against it. But
right,
I mean, it obviously it was in the city's best interest to not have the particle accelerator explode.
Yes, right. So I, you know, and if he had gone to the media
right.
and succeeded, then. It just goes to show you, don't tell the bad guy what you're going to do, because they'll find some way to use it against you, you know, because then he felt like he couldn't do that. But
right. And whose interest was it for the particle accelerator to explode? It was Harrison Wells. I mean, everything is proceeding as he has foreseen it.
So, you know what? Let me talk. You put a little note here about the title, The Sound and the Fury, mm-hmm. and it shares its name with a William Faulkner book that I'm not familiar with. I have read some Faulkner, but not this one. So tell me a little bit about this. Really, I kind of liked it. I don't know.
All I know is what I read on Wikipedia. It was written in a stream of consciousness style, which is interesting because it's from 1929. It was not very popular, I guess, at the time that it came out. Because I would think a stream of consciousness writing style would seem very, very strange at that point. But what I found interesting, the basic premise of the book, according to Wikipedia, is about the Compson family, former Southern aristocrats who are struggling to deal with the dissolution of their family and its reputation. And I found that really telling just because The Flash is a show about family. We've got Harrison Wells and his family, the Star Labs group, and he's having to deal with his reputation and the dissolution of the group because of the accident. You've got Joe West having to deal with the dissolution of his family with Iris moving out. So, you know, there are lots of little similarities like that. And of course, just the more obvious one, The Sound and the Fury, because this deals with Hartley Rathaway and he's got Sonic powers in the
right.
episode.
Well,
so.
And hey, disillusion with his family in
oh,
a big way.
Oh, yeah, of course, right. Yes, sorry, I forgot to mention that. Yes, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. So. Well, I
and
you
his
know,
reputation,
was,
too, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I really like this character. It's very interesting. A little over the top for what we've seen so far from most of the villains, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't bother me. I thought it fit pretty well and fairly well with the comic book version of the Pied Piper. Now, later on, in some versions of the comic book, the Pied Piper became the Flash's friend. At least Wally West Flash. They became mm-hmm. Good friends, and he was less of a villain. Not sure that's going to be happening in this show. I don't think they'd get along even if he wasn't a villain.
Yeah.
So I did like him. What was your overall feeling of the character?
I really enjoyed him too. I mean, I liked that sort of bigger than life kind of, you know, it was a comic booky take on the character. He was very, what do I want to say, showy, I guess. I think Andy Mientis, I guess is how you pronounce his name. I thought he did a really good job with the character. Brought a lot of humanity to the character. And also, you know, just a touch of crazy to it, which is great. Because, I mean, you know, I can kind of see where he's coming from. So he talks about how he's got this ringing in his constant ringing in his ears. He's got these special hearing aids that he uses. And the fact that he has to pull one out like that, I'm not sure exactly how a hearing aid like that works with the wire, like all the way in your ear, but, that's pretty nasty and that would not be comfortable. But, no. As a person that suffers from, minor hearing loss myself and tinnitus, which is a kind of a constant ringing in your ear, it can just kind of make you nuts sometimes. So I appreciated his portrayal of somebody who was struck by that. Now, I can't say I would go as far as he went or anything
okay.
like that.
But. Well, hey, you know, if you're starting to feel like that, you've got people you can talk to, you know, we're here for you. And I won't shun you.
Thank you, Josh.
Okay, so let me, you know, I they could have made him really, you know, one of those villain of the week type things that we've talked about, but they incorporated him in the story in a way that he was connected to Wells, which really helps bring a lot of this other stuff together with Wells. So I want to talk about Wells here. I want to make sure we have enough time to discuss our feelings about that.
Okay.
Okay, so Reverse Flash, huh? He's got the suit. He's got the ability to get the speed. Apparently, he's got a red streak when he has to run away.
Yeah.
Any doubt left about him being Reverse Flash?
Kinda. So
yeah, you're saying kinda? Really? I'm a little surprised, actually.
Well. I mean, other than
the
fact...
I'll come right out. I'm going to say, I still have doubts. I still have okay. doubts. Despite what Tom Cavanaugh has said to the public, that he is the Reverse Flash.
See, it's all about semantics. And I am a number of people in my family hate me because, I mean, I am one of those people that just kind of catches things, you know, by the words that are used, right? And I argue semantics. It's like, you know, you said there was no more milk. Well, there is milk. It's like, no, you didn't. You said there was no more milk. It's like, well, there is. There's that little drip in there, right? It's like, you know, whatever. But
are you causing disillusion in your family?
I am. It's all about my reputation. Yeah. He is probably the Reverse Flash. Like, but what is that? Is it the Reverse Flash that we know from the comic books? What does Eddie have to do with it? I mean, there's still so many questions, but let's say this. He has speed power. Which,
he does.
Whoa. I mean, they just kind of came right out and showed that in this episode.
I know. That shocked me. But it is limited speed power.
He's got something. He's got a glitch. Something is going on with him. But... Yeah, I, you know, and again, there's, you know, time travel potentially involved here, the supposition is, and, you know, he's a Reverse Flash, but does that mean that he's the same character that we saw at the end of the first part of the season? Maybe. You know, I don't know. It's...
Well, I say that is still unclear, and I'm not convinced that particular version that we saw is him. Now, like you said, you know, is he some version of Reverse Flash? Yeah, maybe, or at least the first incarnation of him, or something. But I think we're going to see that there's something much deeper that he's creating that. You know, it might involve Eddie somewhere down the line, or it might be something completely different. But I'm not giving in. I am not saying he is the Reverse Flash.
Okay.
So that's just my. I could. That's going to come back and bite me probably, but that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying he is the Reverse Flash, but I'm just saying that again. We're going to be arguing semantics because using the term Reverse Flash is probably not going to mean what everybody assumes that it means.
No,
and I don't know exactly what that means at this moment. It's going to be a twist there in some fashion.
He's drop of milk man. That's who he is. But all right. So what? Whether he's Reverse Flash or not, whether he's something else. What's his end game? What is he? What's he out for? What's the point here?
Well, based on his discussion in the kind of the tag at the end, he's trying to tap into apparently the Speed Force because something is wrong. Even though we saw him with these bursts of speed, he's like I said, he's got a glitch. There's something wrong with his speed powers. And so he's trying to use Barry as maybe a guinea pig or as a this is not going to sound quite right, I guess, but a petri dish, right, to see how these speed powers work so he can maybe deconstruct them and then fix himself. And maybe it's not. I think there's the assumption that it's like, oh, well, he wants to do this because if he is Reverse Flash, then he wants to do it because he wants to be better than the Flash and beat the Flash. But maybe it's not, because the conflict that I have in me is that the things that we see Harrison Wells doing, it's almost as if there are two different Harrison Wells that we are seeing in the series.
Okay.
We are seeing the one Harrison Wells that can stand up out of the chair and move fast, and he doesn't hesitate about stabbing businessmen to keep them away from the Flash, and he is willing to risk all sorts of stuff to protect the Flash. There's the other Harrison Wells that appears to be very altruistic, wanting to help Barry, is very well-spoken and caring and says truly, genuinely compassionate things to those around him, like his speech to Cisco this week. Tom Cavanaugh just does an amazing job at playing a duality in this character. And I'm actually wondering, maybe there are two characters and something else is going on. I don't know.
Okay. Well, that's what keeps us guessing, so that's great. And that's why I'm not convinced. There's so many other little variables that are playing into this that I think are gonna be important. So he goes in front of everybody, whoever watches, press conferences from the police station in Central City.
In the middle of the day.
In the middle of the day, yeah. and apologizes to everybody. He's atoning for his sins, right? Is it genuine? I mean, is he really trying to do that? It did feel like it, but
it did. But so here's
the thing.
It also
served a purpose, though.
Right. He was playing chess, right? And when you play chess, you have to make certain moves and you have to make certain sacrifices in order to capture your opponent. Right. So I think he was forced to play this particular hand in apologizing to the city. But just look at the goodwill that Star Labs got the other week when Cisco created the heat shield for them, or the frost shield for them, I guess, for the police station. And now you've got the guy who blew up the generator or blew up the particle accelerator and injured all these people and caused all this destruction. You know, he's finally coming out admitting all this stuff. But I thought, since Hartley was saying basically for everybody to hear, I know what your secret is. At that point, he's like, well, I've got to admit to something. I thought he was going to stand up out of the chair when he came back to talk to the team. Because he kind of puts his arms back, and I'm like, oh, he's going to push up, you know, step out of the chair. But then he's like, I really screwed up, and it's all my fault. I knew there was going to be a problem, and I went ahead anyway. Which, you know, it's a start. I still think there are a lot of other secrets you can tell, Harrison.
Yeah. I think he picked the one that he knew would impact him the least and yet still get an emotional response.
Agreed.
Was something he could share with the entire city for that. And it really kind of, like you said, it was a chess game with Hartley. I mean, he that was an aggressive move that Hartley had to fight back in a different way than I think he had planned.
But while you mentioned that it was a great thing for Harrison to admit, you know, because it won this goodwill with the city, it also drove a barrier between his team. I mean, it probably out of all the secrets that we know that he has at this moment, and of course there are some secrets that we don't know what they are, but out of all those secrets, I agree it was the best one for him to share. But it still cost him interpersonal relationship with the two, again, I think I mentioned this last week, with the two individuals that'll still work with him from Star Labs.
Sure. Sure. He's sacrificing some pawns there. You know, that is, it's a big sacrifice, but, or, you know, probably not even some pawns. He's probably sacrificing a knight or a bishop or two, you know, because it really affected their relationship. But I think he needed that much of an aggressive move to stop Hartley.
Yeah.
So,
well,
and
it definitely gets the city on his side. I mean, it's
right.
It allowed him the greatest freedom. It wasn't just telling a couple people. It was, you know, something that he could share with a lot of people. So that should Hartley go public with that, it's like, oh yeah, well he already talked about this, because yep. Basically that's where he was going to go.
He took that move away from Hartley.
Yeah.
So, because Hartley had moved past destroying the windows in his amazingly fancy house. Wow. I had no idea science could be so profitable. He is from the future, so I'm sure he had other, you know, side money-making
schemes. Is he?
Well, is he? No. He has future knowledge, I should say. We don't know if he's from the future. But I'm sure he probably had, like, Gray's Sports Almanac. He was betting on some games. And you don't get a fireplace like that without having something. But but he got out of the way. I cannot believe they showed his speed. The window shattered.
Yeah. And Joe knows something's up, but that's not going to be where his mind goes.
No. But I was shocked that they showed it. He runs away quick, shortly. It was like a short distance, you know, a sprint or something.
Uh-huh.
But as red.
I noticed that. I was watching Barry's streaks too. Barry does leave a reddish streak, but you know, it's got some lightning in it. And Harrison, when he ran, it was reddish with like reddish lightning, but it. For when I see Barry running, I think it's because it's the color of his suit, you know, with yellow piping and stuff like that.
Harrison was just wearing
clothes.
Thank goodness.
So yeah,
that'd be a completely different kind of streak.
Why would it? But why would it be red? You would think it would be yellow. Now, is it only yellow because he's wearing a yellow suit, and he wasn't wearing the suit, so it's not yellow?
Wasn't wearing red or yellow.
I don't know.
I don't either. That one threw me off even when I saw it, but don't know. But it's another clue in him not being Reverse Flash, full Reverse Flash. Reverse Flash proper. I don't know how you call it.
Yeah.
And it's not working. Whatever he's doing, strapping that little spider thing to his chest there to absorb
the tachyonic force. Device.
Yes. With that Tina Wells. I haven't seen enough Tina Wells. She needs to, not Tina Wells. Tina McGee. I haven't seen enough of her. I need to see more of her. She needs to come back. Mm-hmm. I know she's coming back. All right. Well, man, so more nothing but questions with Harrison Wells. And let's keep it up. I like the questions.
I do like that they continue to tease this kind of stuff each episode. I'm always eager to see what their kind of their post-credit sequence is, or you know, the last little sequence, because that's always going to be a shocker.
Seems to be a lot of Wells too, because he's got the biggest secrets. But you know what? I do want to mention Iris. They are expanding her character, or evolving her character, I guess. And you know, despite my reservations about the character earlier in the season, I like where she's going now. I really thought she did a good job in this episode, growing a little bit, and so maybe they'll take her out of that kind of whiny blogger kind of character, or and really start to give her the intelligence that she I know she has and that she needs to show. So hopefully, you know, that'll make some of our listeners happy to know that I'm liking Iris a little bit more.
Well, I know we've had discussions about the character, and I think the biggest issues we've had, I think, stem just from the writing of the character, not with the character that is created, or the portrayal by Candace Patton, or, you know, anything like that. And I don't know.
It was just too two-dimensional. You know, she was kind of a flat character. She really just served the purpose of whatever the plot was that week a lot of times. But in this one, they're turning her into something that has more potential.
They're putting her – yes, they are putting the character in a place where they can do the writers and the creators of the show can do more with the character and allow for the character's growth, which I think is cool. I think there also was just the use the way the other characters at the newspaper reacted to her, I think mirrors a lot of frustration that fans of the show have been commenting about online. You've got the editor who he really only hired her because he thought she knew she had some kind of in with the Flash, right? It's not that he thinks she's a good reporter. So, again, it's very two-dimensional sort of thinking about that. Also, who's it? Mason Bridge, who was the guy that was supposed to be showing her the ropes.
Right.
He's pretty harsh to her. I think he called her tacky millennial. And then she's trying to explain about, you know, what her goal is at the paper. And, you know, he interrupts and, you know, says that she's got spunk and gumption and all this kind of stuff. I mean, he's being very condescending to her. And, you know, I don't know that, you know, I don't know what makes that character any better than Iris. Like, we don't know anything about him other than the fact that
he's an award-winning reporter, and
he's been around a while, right?
Been around, exactly. I mean, yeah,
they've told us about him, and he never shows up for the meetings because he's better than everybody else. So of course he's a jerk.
Yeah, he looks down on her generation. You know, I would say, and it's kind of like that realistic portrayal of a job that she would have. You know, she's out to prove herself. And see, this is, like I said, this is a perfect opportunity for the character to prove that she has that intelligence that we suspect that she has and haven't just seen with her being a waitress and a blogger. I just don't think they've been able to expand on her quite enough to be the Iris West that will eventually, potentially be with Barry.
Yeah.
So, all right. Now, Joe, you're a little worried about Joe, huh?
As I mentioned to you previously, I think it was last week. Joe said something about he was happy, and that is usually the kiss of death for characters. You know, when they say stuff like that, and I am even more worried after this week. He's poking his nose in places it doesn't belong.
Yeah, he is.
With Harrison Wells, and that does not bode well.
That's going to be the catalyst, I guess, that I think we get some of the answers about Wells because Joe's poking around. Now, what that says for Joe, luckily he seems to be a popular character. I think they'll keep him around, but you're right. I think he is in some serious danger here.
I don't know. I mean, you look at what Arrow's done with popular characters. I mean, there are plenty of popular characters that are no longer on the show. Now, granted, I don't think any of them are of the same caliber of Jesse L. Martin. I mean, he's an awesome actor, and I really hope they keep him on the show because he echoes in Barry's personal life the lessons that Barry is learning in his professional life of as the Flash.
Well, for me personally, oh, go ahead.
So there's just that, you know, I think the character serves he's really kind of the only character that can serve that purpose. There's no one else that can do that. Now, if they kill him off, I feel like they're getting rid of some really good potential moments for character development and scenes between the actors and the characters and stuff like that.
Right, right. So I think they've put they've gambled. That's not a gamble, but they've put a lot of importance on his character being a father figure. So you say, you know, nobody else on the show could do that. I disagree. You know, I mean, I think Barry's actual father could do that. John Wesley Shipp could do that if they get him out of prison. But they put so much more on him. Now they're living together. You know, that's an important part of the show. He is, you know, the only one in the police department that knows Barry's secret. And he's got that kind of weird connection with Wells. So I agree with you. He's in danger. I don't think they'll kill him off. If you're comparing it to Arrow, though, you know, both Diggle and Felicity on Arrow were popular characters, popular enough that they actually became regulars on the show. So,
right.
You know, I don't think Joe's in any danger of dying, but I do think he needs to watch out.
I just don't want to have him, you know, be the victim of some, you know, freakish accident.
No.
That, you know, like, oh, no, a giant gorilla actually accidentally, you know, ripped him apart or something like that.
A giant gorilla. Now you're just being ridiculous.
But that would never happen on this show.
All right. Well, that would be cool. And speaking of cool, there was some pretty cool stuff in the show, in this episode. you listed some things that I wrote down as well. I think we're both in agreement of some things that we thought were pretty awesome.
Well, what's one of the things that you had on your list?
Okay, well, the speed selfie. That was cool. Misguided, probably. I don't think. I think he's right. You shouldn't be taking a picture.
oh, yeah. You know, but interesting commentary by Cisco, right? It's for future generations to see what we're about. It's like all this talk about the future and preserving the Flash's legacy and stuff like this. It's not going to turn out quite like they expect, I believe.
Oh, no, of course not. No. That would be too easy. And I'm glad it's not going to turn out like that. But, hey, just leave the mask on. Why not leave the mask on? Because still, then it's a picture of the Flash, and they know it's Barry. And if anybody happens to be dropping by Star Labs or, you know, the janitor, the night janitor's cleaning up after something, hey, what's this? So that was pretty cool. Anything else you thought was cool?
There was one quote that I thought was really funny where Barry was talking to Joe, and he's like, you know, it must be hard. And Joe's like, what, to be this handsome? just lines like that. And I will share a quick joke with you that I was thinking about. I had been wondering how Hartley attached his hearing aid to the door.
Yeah.
I figured he used earwax.
Ew.
For that. So
ew. That's nasty.
Yeah, it was. That had me going, ew, you know, like when somebody touches their eyeball.
Oh, yeah. Ew, no.
Just
no.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, one thing about Hartley, I think they were trying to go for his Pied Piper comic look with his sort of Pied Piper hat that was almost hood looking. I think they were going for that with his hoodie.
Yeah, it was kind of just a black hoodie. It looked like he was
wearing. I'm not sure that worked for me. I think they could have done a little bit more with that. And I have to say, I may have mentioned this on our show about Arrow, about Green Justice, but I thought of this actually just tonight before we were recording, because it's a little chilly here. Nothing probably like where it is where you are, but
yeah.
I put my hood up on my hoodie. Man, I tell you, as a villain or a superhero, it's really not that easy to see around you if you're wearing a hoodie.
I'm not sure that would cut off. Yeah, it cuts off the peripheral vision.
Yeah, and if you turn your head to look sideways, then you can't see anything because you're looking at the inside of your hoodie. I'm not sure that's the best costume solution for these guys, but
no capes.
No capes. All right. Well, there were a few pretty cool little references in this show, but before we get to that, I want to share just a couple pieces of feedback from two listeners, and I'll go through these pretty quickly here. But I did want to get your take on their thoughts here.
Okay.
This first one is from Mark, and he's talking about in the pilot episode, Barry can see in slow motion. Right? Remember that? He was seeing people moving and everything looked like he was in slow motion. I think somebody dropped something in jitters.
In jitters, yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. He was moving normal speed while everything was slowed down. So when he vibrates his face, he would just be shaking his head real fast, right?
Right.
I think so, right?
Right.
Well, okay, so if this is the case, Reverse Flash is doing the same thing. Barry sees in slow motion. I guess he can see in slow motion. So to him, it would just appear to be a guy shaking his head, which cracks me up to picture in my head. Guy shaking his head, and it would not be blurred. He may not be able to see the entire face because of the mask, but he'd still be able to see the mouth, nose, and eyes. If that Reverse Flash was Harrison Wells, Barry should be able to tell. I guess this is just a TV show, but that stood out to me.
Okay.
Anyway, thanks for the great show.
No, I got this. This is good. If you'll notice, when Barry shakes his head, he's shaking it from left to right. When Reverse Flash is shaking his head, he's vibrating his head up and down. So the vibrational frequencies between the left to right and the up and down, very much like the way light waves fall, it's polarized. So they can't see through each other's vibrations, Mark. That's just, you get a no prize for that.
That was an amazingly scientific explanation that sounded very accurate.
And that's good. I mean, Mark we got this email from Mark, I think just like minutes before we started doing this show. So like, I didn't even have time to prep for that. So.
That was good. Yeah. I am impressed. See, All I was thinking as I was reading that is, if it is Wells, it's just good that he covers his ears, because I think that would be the key right there. Because I got to tell you, man, Tom Cavanaugh's got some crooked ears, dude. That's
oh, just wait until we get Professor Stein on. Well, they're not crooked, but his ears are huge. Every time I see that actor showing up in another show, his ears have grown like two sizes.
Nice.
But the way we'll know for certain is when the Reverse Flash goes, Barry.
There you go.
You just have to listen for that.
All right. So one more from Armando. He says, here's just a thought. Zoom can alter time relative to himself, as opposed to using the speed force, like most of the DC.
This is Professor Zoom.
I would assume this is from the comics universe that he's talking about here, right?
Yes.
So Zoom can alter time relative to himself, as opposed to using the speed force, like most of the DC universe speedsters do. And there's a lot of them, in the comics. But he can apparently use this ability to move at quote-unquote speeds, rivaling those of even Wally West, and usually faster than the speeds that even Wally can muster in most cases. Rather than actual time traveling, Zoom is controlling the speed at which time flows around him, allowing him to go faster or slower in time than everyone around him. Since Zoom is not actually moving at super speed, rather, he's greatly slowing down time relative to himself and can make himself so fast that even most of the Flashes look to him to be moving in slow motion. The temporal nature of his speed allows him to avoid the usual problems encountered by other Flash-type speedsters, like friction and seeing and hearing at such near light speeds, etc., whose automatic and unconscious use of the Speed Force overcomes these problems. Wow, that was a deep and very long sentence explanation of Professor Zoom. And I don't think in this show, I don't think that that's the kind of speed he's using. I think it's very similar to what Barry is tapping into. What do you think?
I agree. I think that is probably the case. But this is a really interesting thought, and I'm not – I don't recall this from reading this in a comic, but I mean, there's been so many different Flash stories in the last decade that I have not read, so that's not a surprise. But if there's some kind of time dilation effect of the Professor Zoom / the Reverse Flash's speed power, that's kind of interesting. Wouldn't that be using a lot more energy? That could lead to somebody having, you know, weird problems with their legs, right? I mean, if he's having to use up – if the energy that he's using in his speed – in his speed force, not the speed – not capitalized speed force, but just
the energy that he uses for speed, right?
Right. Wouldn't that be taking more energy? Because basically he is basically having to slow down everything else relative to himself. I don't know. Interesting theory or hypothesis, I guess.
There it is. So, well, thank you there very much for that input. We love hearing other people's thoughts and hypotheses. So thank you very much. Again, you can get a hold of us. I think one of those came through email, and one of them was on our Facebook page. So
I think Mark emailed us, and Armando had posted that on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. That's right. All right. Well, hey, just a few references in this show. Let's run down those real quick. There was one right at the top of the show.
Yeah, I loved – and I didn't realize what they were doing until my second time through, but – the fact that they had the Royal Flush Gang in here, I kind of had to shake my head and see, wow, really? Is that who they put in there? But this was a group of villains that had been introduced back in season one of Arrow. A different style, but in the comic books, the Royal Flush Gang is a team that keeps reinventing itself, but they use playing card motif. There's a king, there's a queen, there's a jack, there's an ace. Sometimes there's a ten. Hence the term Royal Flush. So I thought that was really cool that there is a new Royal Flush Gang that was driving around on motorcycles. And I like how we just kind of come right into the middle of this chase. We don't know what's going on. Why is he chasing these people? It doesn't matter. We just get to see him using some of his powers and the teamwork that is going on between everybody.
Sure. And the foreshadowing of chess.
Right.
You know, that's right. Not the Royal Flush because chess, is not chess, but the way they Harrison Wells was talking about it.
Right, the way they caught the people, he was using the terms check and mate, and there were, of course, a lot of chess references in the episode. Iris goes to work for Central City Picture News, is that from the comics? Is that the name of the...
That's where Iris works, I believe.
In the comic books as well.
In the comic books.
Okay, that's cool. And then Cisco comes to his first day of work wearing the Keep Calm and Han Shot First t-shirt, which is a great shout-out. Cisco's always wearing those really cool, geeky kind of t-shirts like you might see on The Big Bang Theory or something like that.
Yeah, and Hartley didn't intimidate him when he made fun of him because he continues to wear them to this day.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Cisco was not intimidated by that at all, by anything at all that Hartley had to say, and pretty much called Hartley out right away. It's like, oh, she seems nice, and you're not. So, Harrison had a nice little shout out to Oliver Queen at his press conference. I thought that was really cool, where he's like, "I've failed the city." Which
I could think of when he did that was, "Oh man, now he's in trouble. Now he's going to get shot with an arrow."
Yeah. You're not allowed to use that term.
You did what? Oh, that's my cue.
Yeah. They mention a different prison than Iron Heights. They mention Bell Rev, which the one problem I have with the Arrow and Flash universe they've set up, everything seems too close. I mean, I know they've said that that Starling City is like 300 or 500 miles or something like that from Central City, But Bell Rev is in Louisiana in the comic books. It's a big prison where they put a lot of, you know, nasty criminals. It's usually used by the Suicide Squad and Amanda Waller. I think this is the first time it's been referenced in the universe here on TV. But
maybe they made it sound franchise. Like maybe, you know, they've got the Bell Rev franchise all across the country. I don't know.
It's Bell Rev Central City, and
yeah, exactly.
Bell Rev Starling City, and then of course Gideon, the computer at the end, does mention that the Speed Force, quote unquote, is with capital S and capital F, is not adhering to the tachyonic stream or to his body or something like that, which is the first reference we've had to the Speed Force in the show, and that is, in the comic books, what gives all the speedsters of the DC Universe their power. It is a dimension outside of our realm that people with the speed can tap into and use the energy to travel faster. And it's whatever it needs to be. It's kind of like the Force in Star Wars.
There you go.
Executive producer said in an interview, it's like the Force before they made the midichlorians. So
that one way to access it is through a mathematical equation. Who was doing that? I can't remember who did that in the comic.
Johnny Quick, I believe.
Johnny Quick. I think you're right, yeah. All right. I'm still working on that one.
Armando will correct me if I'm wrong. I know he's posted several. He'll post the formula again for us probably on our Facebook page.
I want the formula, yeah. I'll work on that.
Yeah. So, and I think that's it. I mean, there were, you know, Pied Piper, we've already talked about in the comics and stuff like that. He's a character that's been around for quite a while and has gone through several different incarnations. Yeah.
Well, the references usually, you know, are little Easter eggs thrown out here and there during the show, but the characters themselves, they're staying very true to a lot of the traits that the characters have in the comics. So I don't really consider those Easter eggs necessarily, more as just them developing a really awesome, cool universe.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, that's it for this episode of Scarlet Velocity and of Flash, but we will be back for sure. But for now, we got to run.
Well, if you enjoyed this episode, you can definitely go out and run on over to iTunes and leave us some feedback there. You can also contact us, like Mark did, via email at scarletvelocity@randomchatter.com. We read everything that comes through, so feel free to just shoot your thoughts over to us, your questions, or whatever you guys want to talk about. Or you can chat with us on Twitter at Scarlet Velocity. Or take part in all the discussions we have over on our Facebook page. We're often posting little news stories in between episodes or screen caps of interesting things we saw in the episode. And that's at facebook.com/Scarlet Velocity Podcast.
And you can also check out our other shows, Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and also Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. We're talking about Agent Carter right now, so you want to check that out. That's a good show. Those are all of our shows are at randomchatter.com. And also, all the shows are available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And, of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please make sure you tell all your friends about it. We want to... Big gang joining us every week as we talk about this wonderful show. And, of course, remember, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for The Flash can be found at www.cwtv.com. The Flash and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.